Right now it is time for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. Arthur joins us, of course, on a Monday morning live, rebroadcast during the week and also on the weekend. Let's bring him in right now. Good morning, Arthur.
When you reheat me, do you add water?
Arthur and I were talking. I was so impressed by the lentil toss last week. I went out and I made lentils, and I thought they came out great. I mean, they were spiced different than Jill liked, but Jill told me they were like cement, but she forgot something, right? Right?
I don't know.
She didn't put water in them when she you got to put a little bit of water.
You made lentils and pasta, like I said last week?
No, I just made lentils with some ham and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. So, no. When I spoke to Jill earlier, she said, he made your recipe that you outlined last week. But that's not mine at all. No. And I don't know. Let me say that all I'm going to talk about beans today, it's the same situation. All legumes, lentils, all kinds of beans do continue to absorb liquid and soften as they stand. So if you make, for instance, the lentils and pasta that I outlined last week, and you want to reheat it, you have to add some liquid, water or broth. I always just add some water and then maybe more salt and pepper, but that's all. But I should also add that if you make lentils and pasta, in fact, I had a young man here, a friend, who wanted a little lentil lesson earlier this week, and I pointed out to him, he's a bachelor, this is a great dish for you, because you can make the lentils, and then eat just part of it with pasta. But don't put all the pasta in and save the lentils, and then you can reheat it another day, and then you add your pasta. So, and then it's not sludge.
Right.
So, because the pasta also continues to absorb liquid as it sits. So if you make pasta with lentils, you really have a brick there. The pasta is not a good idea to making ahead.
I just have to interrupt to say that Marshall conceded afterwards that after the lentils attacked him the second day, that they had to be eaten in small amounts.
You know, this is a matter of taste. I eat these in large amounts. It never killed me.
Well, you're here.
And I like beans, and I like lentils, and they are so healthy. And I am diabetic, as everybody knows. It is the best carbohydrate for diabetics. Because they're very low in what's called the glycemic scale. In other words, they're not metabolized like sugar. It's the opposite of sugar. It's very, very slow metabolism of beans. So I rediscovered this. Lentils I always make. I live by lentils. And I make a lot of different lentil things, including the lentils and pasta, which is, I guess, my most often made dish. Of legumes. Although my young friend the other day asked me, which do you like better? Because he knows I like all of them. Pasta and chickpeas or pasta and lentils? And it's hard for me to decide. It's like you have two children and somebody says, who's your favorite? You don't answer that question. They're both very delicious to me. But I rediscovered lima beans the other day. I dreaded lima beans when I was a kid, and I think it's because they were always so mushy. Now, I love beans, but I don't like necessarily, unless I'm intentionally making them mushy, meaning I'm making a puree or something like that. I don't usually and I do like pureed chickpeas, by the way. I don't usually make lima beans. So my father loved lima beans. I'm going to be doing more exploration of lima beans. But so far, the rediscovery came because I found a recipe I haven't made in years. And I was thinking of this friend. Her name is Anne. Well, her real name is Anna Rose, because she's Italian. Anna Rosa, but we all call her Anne. A Mendolara nurse, Anne Nurse. So Anne Nurse is quite old now, and she's not cooking up a storm every day, but she did for many, many years. And she likes to call herself my Barese mama, because even though she was born in Brooklyn, her parents were from Bari, but in Puglia. But Anne cooks both Italian and very American food. For many years, when she was young, she's in her 90s now, she used to teach, I guess it was through the New York City Health Department. We used to actually have cooking teachers in New York City who were paid by the city and would go out to churches and synagogues and schools and teach people how to cook. And that's what Anne did for many years. And towards the middle of her life, she became super famous in New York because she, every year, staged, I'm going to use the word staged, a benefit Easter brunch. It benefited young people, scholarships to culinary school. So this was, she did this all on her own for years. And then as she got older, various chef friends, and she had many, would come and bring dishes. It was like a potluck brunch, but it really wasn't potluck because you don't potluck with Anne. She has to coordinate everything, make sure there's no duplication of effort, blah, blah. So anyway, I was thinking of Anne, and I was thinking of beans, and I came up with the recipe that she used to make for this brunch, and it was baked lima beans. Now, they're baked like you bake beans, like Boston baked beans, but not sweet, which is what I loved about this recipe when I first made it and still love, even though I have other recipes these days for baked beans. But this, I think I'm going to try this, in fact, with other beans. But I really do love the lima beans. They're big and creamy and meaty, and this is large lima beans. There are small lima beans, too. They taste the same. They're actually a different genus, I think, of bean. And by the way, they're called lima beans. We say lima, but actually they were originally shipped from Lima, Peru. They were these beans were domesticated in Peru. And the big ones and the little ones, both of them, one comes from lowlands, one comes from highlands. I never remember which is which. But anyway, the boxes, when they were exported, said Lima, Peru on it. So people started calling them Lima beans, or eventually it got corrupted to lima beans. They have these in Europe, but they call them usually butter beans or other kind. They have other names for them. But they are originally, I must say, all beans, except for lentils, chickpeas, and we now know also black-eyed peas. All other beans came from the New World, meaning South America, Mexico, Central America, mostly South America and Mexico. And they were introduced to Europe not until the 1500s, after Cortez came back from Mexico. So tomatoes, I mean, I could go, there's a whole list of foods that Cortez discovered in the New World that were introduced to Europe, and now we often think of as even European. I'll give you an example. Zucchini has an Italian name, but in fact it comes from Mexico. So anyway, lima beans are one of those early beans, and I think, you know, I think in America we used to eat a lot of lima beans, but not so much anymore. And they weren't cheap either. I bought lima beans in a place where I usually get my beans, and they're usually very well priced. It was over $3 a pound for lima beans. Of course, a pound of lima beans goes a long, long way. It feeds many people. So in effect, it's a very economical food. But in fact, over $3 for a bag of beans is a lot. So I have to give you this recipe because it's really, really good. I have to say, we have not had company in a week, and they didn't eat these beans. So we've been working on these beans for a week, and we're down to like the last half cup. I'm not sure what we're going to do with a half a cup of beans now, but they were so good. Bob kept saying, can we have those beans again? And the beans, by the way, go very well with ham, which is how Anne served them when she was doing these famous Easter brunch buffets. She made her famous baked ham. I will add that what made it so famous, I think, it's pretty standard recipe for glazing a ham, was that she went way out of her way to this Polish butcher on the Lower East Side to get this extraordinary ham. Years later, Martha Stewart made a big deal about this butcher because he was Polish and she liked him too. He was a great butcher. I forget his name. It starts with a K. I forget the name now. Well, it'll come to me. He's out of business, so we can't go back there anyway. So here's the deal with the beans. Anne's recipe was absolutely perfect, except in one small detail. It's possible that beans have changed. So many things have changed. They're processed differently. They're harvested differently. Who knows? And they don't take as long to cook as Anne thought they would. So I found, after soaking, well, first of all, you do have to sort the beans. Spread them out on your counter, I guess, and make sure that they're all good-looking beans. Sometimes they look a little brown, throw that away. If they look shrivelly, throw that away. They should look plump. And then rinse them off, and you put your 1 pound of lima beans in a big pot with 6 cups of water and soak it overnight. Now, it's funny. Anne says to do this in a cool place, if in the refrigerator if you have room, or they could start fermenting. I keep mine at room temperature. I've never had a problem. But looking up some other cooking methods for lima beans, I did find that that was an instruction here or there. And I guess it goes for all beans. But as I said, I've never had a problem. I put cold water from the tap over the beans. And if they're soaking overnight, they're not fermenting until morning. So when the beans are soaked, now, by the way, you could do this in a quick method, which is to put it in a pot, put the water in, bring it to a boil, let it boil for a solid minute, and then turn the heat off and let it stand a few hours. But I just as soon, before I go to sleep, I put the beans under water. I wake up in the morning, they're all plumped up and in the bowl and looking so nice. You want to cook them. So that's what I do. So once the beans are soaked, I'll put them in a casserole now, or a pot, whatever, with all the water, 6 cups of water, and simmer them. First of all, bring it to a rolling boil. This is without any salt, without anything, just water and beans. Bring it to a boil, and then simmer them very gently, because if you don't do it gently, then they come out of their skins. You don't want that. Now, the most instructions, even on the bag of beans, says to cook them for 40 minutes. But even at the slowest simmer, after soaking overnight, and I've done this twice now, I find the beans that I'm buying cook in about 20, at the most 25 minutes. You do not want them to be fully tender. You want them to be almost fully tender. Like, yeah, I could eat these, but if they cooked another 15 minutes, it might be better. That's where you want them. And that's the only hard part of this recipe, is deciding when the beans are done. Because this is the case with all beans, all legumes. Once you add salt and an acid, they firm up again. I learned this the hard way when I was making a bean salad, and I dressed the beans. These were cannellini beans, not lima beans. I dressed the beans with lemon juice and olive oil and let it stand for a couple hours at least. So I was serving it. It was a salad, after all, and the beans were hard. Because once you add lemon juice, they firm up again. And there's no softening them unless you cook them more, which you're not doing if you're making a salad and if they're already dressed with lemon juice. So be sure that the beans are cooked, but not really soft yet. At this point, there should be at least 2 cups of cooking liquid left. So what I do is I drain the beans, measure out my cooking liquid. If it doesn't measure 2 cups, I add enough water to make it 2 cups, and then combine the beans and the liquid in a pot that's going to go into the oven. I happen to have a terracotta bean pot, which I love to use, and I do think it improves the beans, by the way. But any non-reactive, meaning stainless steel, glass, ceramic pot that can go in the oven is good. And you need a pot with a cover. So you put in the pot all the ingredients, the beans, the two cups of water that you have left, a large onion, very finely chopped. I would say a cup and a half of very finely chopped onion, a half a teaspoon of dry mustard. By the way, mustard does not last forever. If your tin of mustard is more than a year or two old, it's time to buy a new tin. Buy it very small, because who uses that much dry mustard that comes in that big tin? That's why mine is always being thrown away after a year or two. Half teaspoon. If you do have oldish dry mustard, just double the amount. A half a cup of chili sauce. Now, chili sauce is a Heinz product, very much like ketchup, a little spicier than ketchup. So the first time I made this, I didn't have any chili sauce in the house, and I wanted to do it anyway, so I used a half a cup of ketchup, which I then spiked with several dashes of Tabasco sauce to make it a little spicier. A third of a cup of molasses, and here's one of the essential ingredients that you may have to go out of your way to find: really good bacon, a nice smoky, not too lean bacon, or preferably slab bacon, so that you can cut it into quarter-inch dice.
How do you feel about nitrite-free? I guess, sorry to jump in there.
Pardon me?
Nitrite-free? Do you care?
I don't care.
Okay.
I don't eat very much bacon, so little nitrites in my life won't hurt me. Why, do you only eat nitrite-free bacon?
Not necessarily. I haven't had bacon for ages, but there are people who focus on this stuff.
Good smoky bacon, and you need a whole half pound of it. It's a major flavor here.
Right.
So, And then, so I'm going to review. You're going to have your soaked and cooked beans, which are just barely tender, two cups of liquid from the beans, a chopped large onion, a half a pound of slab bacon diced, a half a teaspoon of dry mustard, or a little more if it's older mustard. By the way, if you don't have dry mustard in the house, you could use, like I would say, a tablespoon of Dijon mustard, and a half a cup of chili sauce or ketchup spiked with Tabasco, a third of a cup of molasses, and here's your acid. Well, the molasses is high acid, the chili sauce is high acid, and now you're going to add a tablespoon of vinegar, preferably cider vinegar, and at least 2 teaspoons of salt. I found 2.5 teaspoons might be more like it. So then that's not going to be salty either. You put those all in the pot, just stir it all together, and then you put it in a 300-degree oven for 2 hours. Now, why 2 hours? These beans are already cooked. The reason is, as I said, as soon as you add salt and acid, the beans will firm up again. And cooking until they get tender again will take quite a while, one. And two, in the process of cooking, they absorb a lot of this flavor. And that's it. 2 hours in the oven, covered, and then you remove the cover and you continue to cook it for another half an hour. So altogether, it's going to be 2.5 hours. At this point, these beans should not have fallen apart. They should be really creamy, really have absorbed all these wonderful flavors. And truthfully, it's even better the second day. So you're not going to have to add any liquid in this case, because you want baked beans to be, viscous but not liquid. So, and they will be. This is a really good recipe from Anna Rosa Amendola, the nurse. And by the way, I would think you could make the same recipe with other beans, with pea beans, and then it'll look like those little white beans. Then it'll look more like Boston baked beans. But I find Boston baked beans these days are generally too sweet. And if you look up recipes for baked beans, you're going to find that they almost always have brown sugar in them. This is a third of a cup of molasses. It's the only sweetening. in this whole thing. It does a great job. And this serves, I don't know, if you're serving it as a side dish with hot dogs, it probably serves 8 people. So it goes a third of a cup of sweetener goes a very long way here. And, of course, the bacon probably has a little sugar in it, too. But it's really a very finely tuned recipe. The seasonings, I thought, were just right on. The only thing I didn't like was when the beans were freshly made, the onion still had ever so slight crunch. I could live without that in a creamy dish like these baked beans. But on the second day, that you didn't crunch anymore. So I would say these are even better reheated. So that's only one of my zillion million bean and
you sound like the Moosewood Cookbook. Or whatever that was.
It's funny. The Moosewood Cookbook. I just had lunch with some friends who teach at Cornell.
Yeah. They're
here for the holidays. And they were telling me that Moose was in Ithaca. And that even though it still does great business because it's got such an incredible reputation, you don't want to eat there anymore. So all of you who swear by Moosewood Cookbooks, stick to your Moosewood Cookbooks. And don't go to Ithaca for the real thing.
Okay. That is a very helpful tip.
It's a helpful tip, yes. That's right. You live near Ithaca. Well, you grew up near Ithaca.
No, I actually only discovered it in California.
Somebody from New York City, Buffalo is near Ithaca.
That is true. It's referred to as Ithaca.
But it's like 3 hours away, but still.
From here, you have to go overland.
Yeah, you're more than halfway there if you're in Ithaca. Yeah. People don't realize. I met somebody on a vacation. He was all excited because he likes this restaurant in Midtown Manhattan that he'd been to. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. he was all excited that he got a job, and it was just a consulting job, in Rochester. He said, "Oh, Arthur, I'm so excited. I got a job in Rochester. Now I can go eat at this restaurant on 7th Avenue, 57th Street. I said, "Have you looked at a map? Rochester's like 6 hours away."
Yeah, it's not. People have no idea.
No
really.
Idea.
You're going to drive 6 hours for a pizza?
Yeah, people have no idea about
12.
The distances.
Yeah.
And also, they don't have any idea in the wintertime how windy it is in that area of New York. From Buffalo to Ithaca to Cooperstown, that whole area, it's unbelievable.
And you know, for the kids who go to Cornell, they've got
they've got ropes. They have on the walkways. They have ropes. And when I was younger and I lived in Kingston, we went to visit friends at Ithaca, and I couldn't. I said, "What are the ropes up for?" Oh, because in the wintertime you have to hold on.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I guess I'm happy to be in Brooklyn.
You are very happy.
We have no weather. We have no weather in Brooklyn.
You could come
this
here.
This is a January thaw, and we haven't had anything to thaw. I hear it's really cold where you are.
Yeah, like.
But it's supposed to be cold where you are. It's actually supposed to be colder here.
Well, when you think about all the heat from the buildings, the exhaust, the car, the subways, the this and the that, you can add 12 degrees and without even flinching.
I guess, but you know. Brooklyn is not Manhattan. I don't live, there aren't really any high-rises where I live. I mean, yeah, there's like a 17-story building on the corner, but that's sort of it. I don't know. I'm not sure that works here. Remember, I'm near the park. I'm surrounded by trees.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. They ameliorate.
Marshall, what's the temperature here?
Right, the man-made stuff here.
It's 14 degrees here right now.
It's 14. I'm trying to see what the temperature is here, but I don't know.
You're comfortable inside your...
It's above freezing. It's 28 degrees.
Uh-huh. Okay, so there's...
And it's going to go all the way up to 35 today. But the rest of the week is going to be in the 40s. I mean, I used to go to Salerno for the winter because it was in the 40s.
Well, isn't it nice
until the winter where every time I turned on the computer in the morning in Salerno... I would see that it was warmer in New York than it was in Salerno. So, I don't know, New York is becoming Naples. Well, you know, we are on the same latitude as Naples, even though the weather is much warmer there.
So there you go. You've solved a lot of stuff for us today, Arthur, not the least of which is making...
What?
I said you've solved a lot of stuff for us today.
I did?
Yeah.
Like what?
Beans.
Oh, well, you don't like beans, so... Well, do you like chickpeas?
Sometimes.
I love chickpeas.
Yes, I do.
I love chickpeas, too. But yesterday, the other day at my produce market, which is this very cheap store, I shouldn't say it that way. Makes it sound terrible. Has great prices. So I travel a little bit because I can stock up. Anyway, point is, they had canned beans, a brand of which I bought the tomatoes, and they were good. So I decided, all right, it's only a dollar a can. I buy some chickpeas, and I made hummus with it yesterday just to check out the chickpeas. And I'm going back to my Goya chickpeas. These were not nearly as tasty as Goya, and Squisita is the brand.
I used to get...
And they made a very sort of runny hummus. I used exactly the same proportions I always use, and it came out too thin.
I should
have been more careful with the bean liquid.
I get Goya. I used to get Progressive, because my mother, when I was a kid, used to get Progressive chickpeas.
Too.
But now I get Goya, because I like... It tastes better.
I have bought, just to see what the difference is, and there is a difference, Goya now has organic chickpeas, and they are sweeter. I don't buy them because they're organic. I buy them because I like the flavor better. I find they have a much sharper flavor than the other ones, and certainly more than these Squisita. We're going to eat the hummus, don't worry. I put, you know, lemon, chutney, garlic, tahina, and we had some yesterday. We'll have more today. But, by the way, that's a thing I never even considered buying in a supermarket. And somebody asked me the other day, what brand of hummus do you like? I said, I don't know. I don't never bought I never bought hummus. I buy chickpeas. I make hummus. It's not hummus. Not that.
Right.
So anyway, there we are.
All right.
Know your beans.
Know your beans.
You got to know your beans.
All right. Beans 101 this morning. That's what we had. In class, yeah. Beans 101.
All right,
we're
well,
past
it's
101.
Now my time to get off the phone.
Okay.
I'll
all
get
right.
off the radio.
Thank you.
All right, have a good
for our
day.
Class. Yes, you too.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Arthur Schwartz of the Food Maven and our Beans segment this morning here on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton. Flawless catering and event planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467. On the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.